Hello and welcome to the Energy Pioneers Podcast, a show dedicated to the legacy of the pioneers of the offshore oil and gas industry. I'm energy historian Jason Terrio. Each podcast episode features stories of industry pioneers whose leadership, grit, and technological expertise built the modern offshore industry in the Gulf of Mexico and around the world. For more than two decades, the Houston-based Oilfield Energy Center, now the Energy Education Foundation, has honored these legendary men and women by inducting them into the OEC's Hall of Fame. The stories are from the Hall of Famers themselves, whose original interviews, some recorded 25 years ago, have been digitally remastered and preserved for posterity. The advancement and deployment of new technology in deep water over the last few decades has been nothing short of astounding. Many have equated the technological revolution in offshore E&P to space exploration. With Uncle Sam footing the bill for deep space telescopes and Mars rovers, however, money is no option. But in the real world of capital-intensive investment by oil and gas companies to explore for and produce American energy way out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico in thousands of feet of water, it's a risky, calculated business that requires creativity, confidence, luck, and in some cases, divine intervention. All of these factors and more played into the pioneering development of the industry's first production spar by Oryx Energy in the 1990s. In this series finale, Don Vardaman, who was inducted into the Offshore Hall of Fame in 2015, tells the story of the Neptune spar and how it changed the economics for deep water.
Yeah, I think we had a lot of confidence that we were building a good company, and I think that was prevalent there. I mean, everybody was proud to be working for Oryx and proud to be a part of the team, because people ask me now, what's the worst part of retirement? It's the loss of the contact with the people. I mean, we built an exceptional team there, and I think that they instilled that a lot. It had to come at that level, at that time. It just had to come down from the top to be able to say, let's get the right people.
To understand the origins of the first production spar, we have to venture back in time several decades to track the organizational history of the company and the people who brought it to fruition. Sun Oil, which in the late 1980s became Sun E&P, the predecessor to the Dallas-based Oryx Energy, has a storied past that dates back to the Pugh family and the Spindletop discovery at the turn of the 20th century. The focus of Sun Oil had always been refining and transportation, but over time its E&P sector grew to become a major player in offshore, thanks in large part to its expertise in geoscience. In the 1980s, this independent arm of the Sun Oil conglomerate invested heavily in new geophysical technology, computers, digital mapping, 3D seismic, and integrated workstations in order to compete with the offshore giants like Shell and Exxon. Led by geologist-turned-executives Jim McCormick and Jerry Box, the company spun off from the Pughs to create its own E&P firm and rebranded as Oryx Energy in 1989. According to industry legend, the Oryx icon was chosen because it was the one animal in the African safari that would stand and fight a lion. As the largest independent oil and gas producer in America at the time, Oryx had developed the talent and the technological prowess to compete with the majors in the new high-stakes deepwater arena. Trained as an electrical engineer at Texas A&M, Don Vardaman spent much of his early career with the company in West Texas and later worked on a cogeneration project out of California. Although he had zero experience in offshore, company leaders called him up in the early 1990s to head up its deepwater group and take the lead in developing the Neptune spar.
So in 1991, I moved to Dallas, and I was the manager of operations technology. I was actually pushing automation installations, and my job was to help the rest of the company progress automation. And move from there into our first real deep water project. We had a subsea tieback in 1991 time frame, but then in 1992 I moved into the deep water group, and so that was my first deep water experience, and began to work on another subsea tieback, which was three gas wells in 1600 to 2300 foot water depth. And Oryx at that time took me and two other guys who had not set foot on an offshore platform, and gave us those three gas wells to hook up to something.
Wow.
And so we had a good group of deep water experience in the company, and so we were to execute it. So it was a good development move for all three of us. And so we worked through the other people in the group that had done the first subsea tieback that Oryx had done. And so we went from getting those gas wells on production in about, took us about 18 months to get those on production, then rolled off of that project into the Neptune project. So Oryx was spun off from Sun Oil Company.
Okay.
In 1989, when Sun decided to become a pure play refining, marketing, pipeline company. And so they got rid of the exploration and production part of it and spun us off first as Sun E&P, and then we became Oryx Energy Company a year later. And so Oryx survived for about 10 years. And so in 1999, Oryx was bought by Kerr McGee. So during that time frame that we existed as Oryx, we were doing some subsea work. We were doing a lot of international work. But the main focus that we had was acquisition of deep water leases in the Gulf of Mexico. So we had a lot of shelf properties, a lot of platforms we were operating, but we really saw the future as being in deep water. And so we knew we were going to have the tools and the people and the knowledge to be able to do those jobs. And so hence the first subsea tieback, and then the stretch on those subsea tiebacks into 2,300 feet of water with three guys that are just learning how to do this. And then we had some significant discoveries in Viasca No Late 26 at Neptune, and had a well out there that we had done, I believe it was two different zones we had tested, and did drill stem tests on those, and together they were over 10,000. It was over 10,000 barrels a day, which was one of the largest drill stem tests in the history of the Gulf of Mexico at that time. And so we knew we needed to develop this, but the technology that existed at the time was uneconomical for a field that was about 75 million barrels in 1,900 feet of water.
In 1986, at the dawn of the deepwater era, Ed Horton, a legendary inventor of offshore structures, began developing the design and patent for the production spar as an economic way to produce smaller reserves in deepwater. Sun E&P, the predecessor to Oryx, followed Horton's progress closely and adopted the design concept after making a significant discovery in the late 1980s at Viasca Knoll A26.
So Ed Horton, just a brilliant man. He's a member of the National Academy of Science, National Academy of Engineering. I'm really blessed to have been able to call Ed a friend. And he held the original patent on tension leg platforms as well. So Ed had an opportunity to apply the knowledge that he had in offshore production and the design of the tension leg platform. He had been involved in some of the early work on directional drilling, deep water drilling. He was part of the MOHO project where they were trying to drill to the into the beyond the crust of the earth in 20,000 feet, and using a floating drilling rig with, as he described it, outboard motors hanging off of it to hold it on station. And I suspect it's a little more exotic than that, but Ed's sense of humor was always good. And so we had good people around us that understood subsea production and subsea wells and the ones that had done that. At the time we did Neptune, no one had built production spar number one. And so we started looking at that technology while I was working in California. Unknowing to me, our marine technology department, which was one guy, his name is Vic Bogus, a brilliant mechanical engineer, but he was responsible for following marine technology. Yeah. And that's about the time, 86 or so, is about the time that Ed Horton patented the production spar.
Okay.
And he formed a joint industry project that included included Sun at the time, Amoco, and Chevron were all part of that. And so he also brought on board Rama Offshore Contracting as a part of his group that would build the first spar, and brought in McDermott to do the engineering and build the first topsides, and brought in Reading and Bates to provide the drilling rig had we needed to have a drilling capable spar, which we did not. So,
okay.
So when we started looking at that, in following that as a joint industry project in 86, and then when we came around to the 92-93 time frame, began to look at it and say, well, okay, this is 75 million barrels in 1,900 feet of water, and tension leg platform would work in that water depth, but it costs too much. And other options is too deep for a fixed leg structure at that time. And so Vic Bogus said, well, we've been studying this spar, maybe it's time.
But Oryx's 50-50 partner in the project, ConocoPhillips, had other ideas. Conoco had been the first company to design, install, and operate a tension leg platform, the Hutton TOP, in the North Sea in the mid-1980s. And it had already installed a smaller version of a TOP in the Gulf of Mexico. It set its sights on continuing with the TOP technology to develop the Vioscanol field. Oryx's spar concept was estimated at 25% less cost than a TOP, but it was unproven. With the lease set to expire and no compromise made on which firm would become the operator, the two companies scheduled a final meeting to decide the fate of Vioscanol. Mark Haney was one of the Oryx representatives who went to this historic meeting. On his way to the Conoco office in Houston, he stopped at an Eckerd drugstore and grabbed a fresh deck of cards, just in case. If the partners could not come to an agreement, they would cut cards as a last resort to decide the fate of the prospect. As it happened, the future of the project, and indeed the future of the spar in the Gulf of Mexico, would ultimately be decided by chance. According to the official history book, the partners agreed to the order of suits: spades, hearts, diamonds, clubs, in case of a tie. Conoco cut first and drew the six of clubs. With his heart pounding, Mark Haney pulled his card and stared at it for a few seconds. He then threw it down on the table, turned around, and walked out the door. It was the six of hearts. Oryx was the operator of Block 826, thus setting the stage for the development of the first production spar in the industry by luck of the draw. I first heard this unbelievable story while interviewing former Sun E&P and Oryx people for an organizational history of the company and its charismatic leader, Jim McCormick. In 2023, I interviewed Don Vardaman once again about his role in the Neptune project. 6 years following the infamous card-cutting incident that put Oryx at the forefront of deepwater innovation, Don successfully led a team of engineers and contractors to design, build, and launch the Neptune spar. He and Ed Horton were standing on the deck of a supply boat on the morning of September 20th, 1996, when the Neptune hull was towed out to location and set up right to begin this first-of-its-kind installation. For a few moments, Everyone held their breath.
Brought the cylinder out, and so they had microphones on me, and I was standing right next to Ed Horton, the inventor. And Vic was somewhere working on the vessel and watching and everything. I was there just watching what was going on. And Vic was calling the shots along with McDermott. So Ed was standing right next to me, and then as the bottom of it began to go underwater, and it made that 73-second rotation to vertical. We were mic'd up so we could record his reaction. And it was the same as all of us and everybody on the boat. It was total silence. Total silence. That thing came up, and it was designed such that it would come up, and then it'd go down, and then it'd come back up and settle out. And so as it came up and then it settled down, everybody, is it going to stop? Yeah, it stopped. Pop back up, and then he just sitting pretty, and Ed said, "Well, I guess Archimedes was right." Proved it again. But yeah, that was a big day.
The Neptune project was such a success that the company published a book and a documentary to memorialize what the great people of Oryx had accomplished. A year later, Oryx was acquired by Kerr McGee. In 2006, Anadarko bought all of Kerr McGee's offshore assets and continued the development of the production spar as an innovative economic solution to its deepwater program. Since the 1990s, the industry has installed 13 additional production spars in the Gulf of Mexico, at least 7 of which can be directly tied back to Ed Horton's design and Don Vardaman's pioneering deepwater group at Oryx Energy.
I mean, we knew we were cranking out successes, and we knew it was because we had technology, the best technology and the best people and all of that. But it really, by the time it got to us, it was pretty well, if we know how much oil and gas there is there, how do we produce 73 million barrels of oil in this far depth? And so it was our job to be ready for that, like Vic Bogg has helped us. You know, Vic was our marine technology department, and that was the blessing, is that it was one guy that was that good. And that was the philosophy we kept all the way up until Oxy bought us, I guess. Each time we went through a merger or an acquisition, going from Oryx all the way through to Anadarko, we always knew that the company that we were merging with or being bought by was specifically looking for that expertise.
I couldn't have mapped such a fun career in any way, but it's just been really, really a blessing to be able to work with all the people in the offshore industry and to learn so much and to be able to handle some of the challenges that we come up with. It's just always something new, something challenging out there, and the people always just rise to the occasion and find a solution. It's just really been fun to be a part of this.
This concludes our final episode of the Energy Pioneers podcast for the series sponsored by the Energy Education Foundation. Each year, the organization inducts a handful of these industry pioneers into the Hall of Fame. To date, there have been over 125 individuals recognized as industry pioneers by the EEF and its predecessor organization, the Offshore Energy Center. Visit the energyeducation.org website to explore more of the history of the offshore pioneers. And if you ever come to Galveston, Texas, be sure to visit the Ocean Star Offshore Drilling Rig Museum, which pays tribute to the men and women and companies that built the offshore oil and gas industry. I'm energy historian Jason Terrio. Visit jasonterrio.com to learn more about my work and similar projects. This has truly been an honor to host and produce this program and to bring to light these stories and voices of the pioneers who built this great American industry. Thank you for listening.